भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मोनानिहानिलायम दन्दावग्दीयचेतसम् नायेत्य यस्य सञ्चङ्गा वेनो विना भविद्यते। मोनानि हानिलायम दन्दावग्दीयचेतसम् नायेत्य यस्य सञ्चङ्गा वेनो विना भविद्यते। मौना अवॉइडिंग यूज़लेस स्पीच, अनीहा गिविंग अप फ्रूटिव एक्टिविटीज, अनिल आयमः controlling the breathing process, dandaha strict disciplines, vak of the voice, geha of the body, chetasam of the mind, na not, he indeed, ete these disciplines, yasya, of whom, shanti, exists, anga, my dear Uddhava, venubi, by bamboo rods, na, never, bhave, is, yati, a real sannyasi. Translation. One who has not accepted the three internal disciplines of avoiding useless speech, avoiding useless activities, and controlling the life air can never be considered sannyasi merely because of his carrying bamboo rods. Purport. The word danda indicates the staff carried by those in the renounced order of life, and danda also indicates severe discipline. The Vaishnava sannyasis except a staff made of three bamboo rods, signifying dedication of the mind, body, and words to the service of the Supreme Lord. Here Lord Krishna says that one must first accept these three dandas or disciplines, namely control of the voice, body, and mind within oneself. The practice of anilayama or pranayama regulating the life air is meant to control the mind, and one who always thinks of service to Lord Krishna has certainly achieved the perfection of pranayama. Merely carrying the three external dandas without assimilating the internal dandas of bodily, mental, and vocal discipline can never make one an actual Vaishnava sannyasi, as explained here by Lord Krishna. In the Hamsakita section of Mahabharata and in Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadesamrita, there are instructions regarding the sannyasa order of life. A conditioned soul who adopts only the external ornaments of Tridandi sannyas will not actually be able to control the senses. One who takes sannyas for false prestige, making a show of saintliness without external advancement in Krishna Kirtan, will soon be vanquished by the external energy of the Lord. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Sakshurunmilitam yena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Si chetanamanobistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam tadati svaparantikam Si Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Si Advaita Gadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In the Manusamhita it is described how a sannyasi should fix the three dandas of mind, body and words in his mind. So there also the injunction is the internal focus rather than the external focus. In the purports in the first canto of Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada speaks about the modern day sannyasi, and he says, those men who dress up like sannyasis, I always remember that whenever I'm trotting around, and oftentimes I'm thinking that when people bow down, I think they're not bowing down to me, they're bowing down to my clothes, because if I would change my dress, they would stop bowing down. That's the proof. But to really begin to go deep, one must embrace the spirit of sannyas. The Upadesamrita is mentioned because Upadesamrita begins with controlling the mind and the senses. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udra pasta vegam, etan vegam, yuvisa heta dhira. That is the point, to be dhira, to be not concerned by the pushings of the mind and senses, and to control these mind and senses. That is the business of a sannyasi. He's simply like the tortoise, as described in the Gita. He withdraws his limbs. He will not act when the senses and mind are pushing. He will not act. But for devotional service, he will extend his limbs and he will act. So he'll engage the mind in service. He'll engage the senses in service, but otherwise not. So this is difficult, and it takes practice. Abhyasa yogi yuktena chetasananyagamina paramam purusam divyam yatipatna sintaya. One must fix the mind, fix the consciousness by abhyas, by regular practice. Then it will be possible. Otherwise not. Furthermore, one requires the mercy of the Vaishnavas and the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Without the mercy of the Supreme Lord, it is not possible, not possible at all, to overcome the pushings of the material nature. It is said that when Lord Chaitanya was asked by the residents of Kulinagram, who is a Vaishnava? Then the Lord said, whoever has chanted Hare Krishna Maha Mantra once. The second year he was asked the same question, who chants the Maha Mantra all the time. The third year he was asked the same question. One who by his presence makes others chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So three levels of devotees described, and then the question asked by Satyaraj Khan, the representative of Kulinagram community, was, how can we recognize a Vaishnava? What are his activities? And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Vaishnav Sevana and Nirantar Nama Krishna Sankirtan. So these are the things, to serve the Vaishnavas and to always, Nirantar, without end, chant the holy name of the Lord, or glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So either chanting the holy name, or glorifying the Lord, or absorbing our mind in remembering the Supreme Lord. So always absorbed in the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is actually the business of a sannyasi. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would spend hours and hours glorifying Krishna. His lectures would be very long. They could last many, many hours. Right? And he was always eager to speak. And of course he had a lot to say also, since he was extremely learned. So there was a lot to explain. So the purport is nice, placing the emphasis of advancement in Krishna Sankirtan, or in Krishna Kirtan, in glorification of the Supreme Lord, is indeed the correct process. Because merely by following a discipline of sense control on the strength of philosophy is difficult. That is difficult. How long can we do? So, to become absorbed in the glorification of the Supreme Lord. And this is what we see emphasized in the literatures of the Goswamis. For example, Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita begins with a description of Narada Muni looking for the greatest devotee, and he comes to a Brahmana who is in Prayag. And this Brahmana, he is glorifying him and he's saying, Narada comes and he said, "You are most wonderful. You are the greatest devotee. You have made such nice arrangement for the glorification of the Supreme Lord." The Brahmana had made very nice arrangements for worshipping the Lord and glorifying him and speaking around him and so on. And everything was opulent and proper. But then the Brahmana was saying, "Why you are saying that I'm the greatest devotee?" He said, "In South India there is a king. He is doing so much more than me. He's not only himself worshipping the Lord, but he's engaging many others in the glorification of the Supreme Lord. Therefore his glorification is by far much greater than mine." And Narada goes off to South India to meet that king. And the king again says, "Oh, I am not at all the greatest devotee." And he points at another devotee. And then Narada goes there. And then again, that devotee points at another devotee. And it goes on and on like this. But all of these devotees are outstanding for their glorification of the Supreme Lord. Narada himself, always traveling around the universe, playing his veena and worshipping C.C. Radhika Raman. This is our business, to somehow or other glorify Krishna. So we are chanting here, we're chanting somewhere else, always absorbed in chanting. That's what we do. Like every year so many devotees are going to, they travel all the way to India, and they meet lots of devotees from back home, and what do? They have a kirtan. So why not just stay here and have the kirtan here, one could say. But no, we are going, and we have that kirtan there, because kirtan is not just an automatic repetition. Because within kirtan, it is not only that kirtan is a sadhana, not only that it is a practice as part of a process for our purification. No, kirtan goes far beyond that. It is devotional service. And devotional service is Sri Krishna Akarsani. It attracts Krishna. And therefore, that devotional service can attract Krishna, and Krishna can manifest himself in the kirtan. And to some extent he does. And that makes each kirtan different and sort of an enlivening experience. So in the chanting of the holy name, We are not only looking at it as a sadhana, but we're also looking at it as Rupa Goswami described, that when he's chanting tunda tanda vingrat on the tongue, the Lord is dancing and he's desiring millions of ears, right, and millions of tongues. Yeah, so that means Krishna is manifesting himself. And this is what we are looking for in our devotional service. Not only for that it is a process, but also that Krishna is manifesting himself to one extent. Now, yes, to what extent is Krishna manifesting? Are we all getting darshans of Krishna? Not so often, or practically, not really. Then, but we still, as we are beginning to practice devotional service, we gradually begin to notice the presence of Krishna more and more. And Krishna is revealing himself. We begin to see the arrangements of Krishna. Even in ordinary daily affairs. And too many times, it is more than coincidence. Too many times we are seeing that no, this cannot be coincidence. For example, we speak about something. Later on you open up a book and it's right there, right on the topic. How many times does it happen? It does. Many of us experience things like that. And then you see Krishna. Or you give a class and really you come on a certain topic and you really don't know exactly why. But then it just may be relevant to people's lives. And there's someone in the audience who says, I felt like you were speaking directly to me. So, well, you know, I was just saying something. Because there is Krishna. There is Krishna in the equation. There is Krishna as the doer, as one of the five factors of action. The Supreme Lord is mentioned, and he is the primary factor for any action. So in this way, we must always see the Supreme Lord. Stavara jangama deka na deka taramurti saivatra hoye ista deva spurti. That when we see either moving or non-moving things, behind we see Krishna. Behind everything we can see Krishna. And the whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is to understand how Krishna is behind everything. Isvara parama Krishna satsitananda vigraha anadira diya govinda sarvakarana karana. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Fine. But we see that Krishna is also in many times the intermediate cause. For example, if you look at the whole description of the creation, then we know that Krishna is the origin. Govindam Adi Purusham. Then Krishna expands himself. And then Balaram, from that expansion, again further expansion, Vasudev, Sankarsan, Padyumna, Aniruddha. And then, that's the first Chaturvyuha, then we get a second, then we get Narayan, a second Chaturvyuha, and so on. Now we see that Pradyumna and Aniruddha, they are presiding deities. They are presiding deities of intelligence and the mind. Aniruddha for the mind, Pradyumna for intelligence. So in this way, we're seeing that they are part of looking after the energies of the Lord. They are an expansion of the Lord that involves with the energies of the Lord. Whereas it says, Vrindavanam paricheya padam ekam nagacchati, that the Supreme Lord, Krishna himself, he doesn't take one step outside of Vrindavan. He's absorbed in his transcendental pleasure pastimes. Prabhupada liked to mention his godbrother from Germany, who was a professor, Schulze, also known as Sadananda. And Prabhupada said that Sadananda was very intelligent because he had come to India and he tried to figure out who was the Supreme Lord. And when he saw all the deities, he looked at them. And when he came to Krishna, then he said, "This is the Supreme Lord." He said, because all the other ones, they were holding weapons and different things. He said, or Lord Shiva performing also a weapon and performing austerity. So he said, they're all working. But Krishna, he was playing a flute. He's enjoying. He's the Supreme Lord. So that was intelligent, very intelligent, to understand that the business of the Supreme Lord is to work. There is a particular Christian sect who have a little magazine that they like to give to people, and they produce that magazine widely. And this particular group has the idea that one day there will be heaven on earth, and then instead of one animal eating another and all these things, that will be all over and everyone lives in harmony and peace. And they think everything will stay the same. When heaven comes on earth, you'll have the same family that you have now, but all the family problems will be over. You know what I mean? This one is that, and that one is this. That will all be gone, and everyone will live in harmony, and the mice will be happy with the cat, and like that, you know? That's sort of the idea, right? And then it says that there are 144,000, that number is somewhere in the Bible, 144,000, they'll go to heaven. So then you ask them, well, what are these 144,000 going to do? He said, oh, they are looking after the affairs of the material world, and they're making sure that everything is going fine. I said, God, they have to work overtime, right? Is that fair, you know? So better don't go to heaven, because in heaven you've got to work for eternity. Better wait till heaven comes on earth. Anyway, a somewhat naive philosophy from the perspective of a devotee. Although, when we think of Jarikanda, Lord Chaitanya, he did make the tigers and deers embrace each other and kiss, so that was something like the mice and the cat. So Lord Chaitanya showed that we could rise above the material conditioning and already reach the spiritual platform here on earth. That's the idea. That is the business of a devotee. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisa kamiye mama janmani janmanisvare bhavatat bhakti rahaita kitvayi, he's basically speaking about sannyas. In that particular verse, he's expressing his position as a sannyasi. Not interested in wealth, not interested in beautiful women, not interested in any followers. And simply wanting your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So that's it. That means already here, on this material world, becoming a resident of the spiritual world. That is janmani janmani swai bhavatat bhakti rahitike twayi. If one is not becoming a resident of the spiritual world, one cannot stay in the material world. It has to be iha yasya ariyadasya karmana manasa gira nikri swapya vastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. One has to be a jivan mukta. One has to please the Lord by his devotional service. And what kind of service? Sevan muke. Service with the mouth. Service with the mouth. Service where one must engage particularly his mouth in glorification of the Supreme Lord. It is mentioned that Lord Ananta, Lord Ananta, he is the one who is really glorifying the Supreme Lord. Not with one mouth, but really with millions of mouths. With all his different hoots, he is simultaneously glorifying Krishna, and it is said he's doing that eternally. And there's no end to his glorification of Krishna. It is said, therefore, the mouth of Ananta is the jewel case in which the jewel of glorification of Krishna, Krishna Kirtan, is being kept. In other words, Anantadev is Balaram. Therefore, we pray to Balaram for the potency and power to be able to glorify the Supreme Lord or to chant. Therefore, we are turning to Nityananda Balaram. And without the mercy of Nityananda Balaram, it becomes very difficult to be successful in this glorification, even when we try. Because it inadvertently happens. My mother used to tell me fairy tales as a kid, and one of them just stayed with me even up to the day of today, and it was about two princesses, and one of these princesses, whenever she opened her mouth, roses would come out, and the other princess, when she opened her mouth, frogs would come out. Right? Now, in my case, it's sometimes roses, and then in the middle of the roses, suddenly a frog jumps out. Yeah? And, what do you do when that ugly frog is bouncing around? You can't put him back, can you? So, there is a problem there. Absolutely. So, it happens that sometimes we did it again. We said something, and you immediately know, I should not have said this. It's really not right. And what do I do now? And it sort of happens in a conversation, with someone, and then the topic comes on a third person. As soon as you are with someone and a third person comes up as the discussion topic, let the red light on the dashboard start flashing. Beware, because now it's going to happen. You're inadvertently going to say something negative about that other person. And then, where to take it from there? So one must be extremely careful in this matter. We avoid that. One should never volunteer to say something negative about anybody, because that can take away our ability to glorify the Supreme Lord. Immediately, the heart closes. Right? Immediately, our heart as a receptacle begins to close. It takes a long time. In the beginning, the heart is like a rock. It's like a lotus that is like so closed that it's like totally hard. And then eventually it opens up a little and we can begin to become a receptacle to the mercy of the Lord. But such type of things close our capacity to tune in on the mercy of the Lord. Still, sometimes for the interest of the Sankirtan movement, something critical has to be said. Srila Prabhupada also wrote a Vyasa Puja offering where he sort of spoke out strongly about the activities of his god brothers and some are maintaining temples and just ringing bells. And what are we doing to preach? And he was hammering. He was strong. He was like quite strong. Of course, at the end of his life, Prabhupada said, sometimes I have used harsh words. So if anyone took any offense, please forgive. He said, I had to do it as a matter of duty. But still, But still, if anyone felt any that there was any offense on my part, please forgive me. Please forgive me. No. There was no offense. But sometimes it happens. Also in dealings with devotees, it happens that some disagreement is there, and that in the course of that, some resentment remains in the heart of a devotee. This is a very serious matter, and that should not remain. There should be nothing like that between devotees, and we can never leave that. We cannot leave that. Such an issue has to be resolved. Sometimes years go over this matter, but it has to be resolved. Well, our Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I had a lot of intimate dealings with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the past. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a very special person in our movement. He was a real leader. No one had to tell that Tamal Krishna was in charge. He was in charge, if you know what I mean. He didn't need anyone to give him a title or not. When he was around, he was in charge. That's how it was. He always had ideas of what to do when other people were wondering what direction to go. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj would say, "This is the direction." And then everyone would say, yeah, he's right. That was his nature. So therefore, he became naturally a forerunner, someone who was doing things for the first time. And he was one of Prabhupada's big leaders. Still, Maharaj wrote also, he wrote an article about some which was called, which was about heresies, heresies in ISKCON. And in that article, he wrote about a heresy is a word that deals with when there is a spiritual misconception or deviation. Yeah. So in the history of ISKCON, sometimes some issues came up. Like at one point, the issue that came up was the friction between householders and sannyasis. Because all these temple presidents, right, they were householders. And the sannyasis, they felt that actually they're holding up the preaching. Yeah. And there was some friction. Yeah. And it came to a head where at one point there was a proposal that Grihastha should all move out and just take care of their own lives, and the temple should be reserved for the brahmacharis and the sannyasis. Right? So it was a big discussion, big issue in around 1975. And who was the leader of the sannyasis? Maharaj. Right? And well, so the GBC, and he convinced everybody. He convinced the GBC, and they passed resolutions to that effect. And then later, Prabhupada asked about the matter and said, "So, what resolutions have you just passed?" And he looked at them and said, "No, this is all wrong," you know. And he scrapped them all. Yeah. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada would correct him. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was explaining that. So, why was that? Yes, because Maharaj was a forerunner, someone who did many things, who dealt with many issues for the first time. So sometimes he might have, he may not have always been right, you know. But anyway, he was still a leader. So sometimes if he had the wrong idea, then he would also take people with him in the wrong direction. He had that potency also. Anyway, Maharaj was one of the first devotees who became involved with the Gaudiya Math. After all, the Gaudiya Math is also part of our family. Srila Prabhupada came from the Gaudiya Math. And why such a separation? And then, due to circumstances, Tamal Krishnamurti became involved with the Gaudiya Math because there was some... there was a court case started by Prabhupada's son for the who wanted the copyright for Prabhupada's books against ISKCON. And then one of the things he said, the son had put in an application and said Prabhupada wrote a will, and in the will he made everything over to ISKCON and not to his family. But the signature on the will was not very strong. It was really clear that the hand was like, shaking. Yeah, because Prabhupada signed that will in his last days. So therefore, the son was saying that his father was not in a good condition at the sign of, at the time of signing the will, not only in a good physical condition, but also not in a good mental condition. And that under duress he had signed. And that therefore the will should be declared null and void. So then it was Narayan Maharaj who came and who testified in favor of ISKCON. He testified and he basically went to court for 1 month in Bombay to testify in different hearings that he was there at the end of Prabhupada's life and that Prabhupada was in good state of mind. And at that time, Tamal Krishnamurti was also in that case because he was the one who prepared the will. So at that time, some friendship developed. So it was an arrangement of Krishna, actually, that had developed. And then later, and what did they discuss? They discussed about Krishna, not about mundane things. So between them, some Krishna katha developed naturally against two mature devotees. And so Tamal Krishnamurti found out that Narayan Maharaj was very learned and that it was interesting. So he had some questions about this and that. And like that, a relationship developed. Well, in the course of that, maybe they went a little far in that relationship with Maharaj. And I was a temple president in Vrindavan. I felt it was going too far. And I spoke up against it. And I ultimately sent a report to the GVC about that. So that wasn't good between me and Maharaj. Of course, it was my duty as a temple president to write a report. But the relationship had become disturbed. I didn't meet Maharaj for many years. And then, shortly before his departure, Maharaj was in Sydney. And he came in the room and he saw me. And he said, there were many in the room, Indrajumna Maharaj, Bhavananda, Ramai Maharaj, and Madhudvisa Prabhu, and Atmaram, and so many others. And then, suddenly, Maharaj comes in the room, and he says, oh, look at this illustrious company, that I, Madhudvisa and Bhavananda, we went through so much, and Indrajumna Maharaj, we went through so much. And then he glorified everyone, and then he said, and there's another guy who went after my blood. So I was like, that was me. So I could see, something is there. Later that day, we had a talk, and we went into the matter deeply, and I explained my position, that I was a temple president. A temple president has a duty. When he sees irregularities, he has to do something. And what did I do? I reported to my superiors, which is my duty. So I said, so Maharaj finally said, all right, I take you off the list. So I was taken off the list. What a relief. What a relief. It was a relief. And actually, it was only a few months later that Maharaj left his body, left this world. And was I glad, right, that I cleared up this thing before, you know, whatever difference there was between us, and that we actually came together. And then 2 weeks after Maharaj left, I had a dream. And Maharaj appeared in my dream. And he came sort of a little bit from above, and he came before me. And he just was effulgent like anything. He fell flat on the ground. Me too. And then he picked me up, embraced me, and such loving experience was there. And I had no doubt about two things. One, he went back to Godhead, and two, he had really forgiven me, or whatever. Our disagreement that once was there was now over. Right? And that was very nice. So there should never should there remain disagreements. They may arise in the course of service. In the course of service, we may both be convinced that in the service of Srila Prabhupada, we do our duty. And maybe we are. And maybe we are even right in the course of doing our duty. And still we cannot leave any Vaishnava with resentment, even if we were right. Because in the material world, it's a matter of being wrong and being right. Whoever, if it's reasonable, if all the good reason and argument is on your side and you are right, then you're right. You know, all the logical arguments are on your side, you must be right. Finished. And if the other guy can't get it, too bad. He's wrong. But in Vaishnava relationships, it's not only about who is right and who is wrong. It's more than that. Right? We cannot leave any Vaishnava with resentment against us, ultimately. If we want the blessings from Krishna, and if we really want to come to that point of developing love of God, it is that deep and that fine, the dealings of the Vaishnavas. And the scriptures are warning us against blaspheming or offending Vaishnavas, upsetting Vaishnavas. Because it's the thing that blocks us in our spiritual advancement. So I told my own story, and a story about involving also Tamal Krishnamurti. I've tried to explain that Tamal Krishnamurti did actually what was logical, because although ISKCON has a relationship with the Gaudiya Math that is somewhat restricted. That relationship is ultimately meant by our natural condition to be a good relationship, because we are all devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So it should be that we should be good neighbors, that maybe with a few differences, but we should basically be good neighbors. But it is due to history. It is due to history that some separation came about, not due to our fundamental roots. Our fundamental roots are the same. There may be some differences in philosophy, the way Prabhupada presented some points, the way someone else presented some points. That could be. But that is secondary. In roots, we are from the same roots, but historically some difference has grown. Of course, sometimes people from the Gaudiya Math say, yes, we're from the same roots, so we should all be one, we should all be together. Say, yeah, but it's not that simple either. Life is not that simple. When there is a history, and there is one, when there is a history, then the history should first be worked out. Just like in a husband and wife and a divorce, and then they say, let's come back together. There's a few things to talk about, you know. And in 19, you did, and then you did, and then you did. Yes, but you did, and yes, you said, and you know, it's like, and after a lot of water under the bridge has all been studied again and brought up again and digested, can one go forward? So, therefore, between the two institutions, there is something to be worked out. There is a history and certain things, certain dealings that need to be worked out before real cooperation can be there. But in the ultimate sense, it ought to be, and maybe one day it will be. So today I have spoken about practical matters in our society, historical matters in our society, and used them to illustrate some philosophical points, the points to the need that is there to have real, genuine, appreciative relationships between Vaishnavas. If we want to go forward. And also, if there is some history where resentment has come about, or some restrictive relationship, all right, then it may take time, it may take an effort, but some, at least some dialogue should be there in order to do justice to the proper Vaishnav behavior. Because Vaishnav behavior is really to take the humble position and to offer all respects to all Vaishnavas. And therefore, since I brought up the name of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I want to say that the association with Maharaj has greatly blessed me throughout my spiritual life. He was like my senior in all respects, and sometimes as I was growing up I was bringing up some points, but in many ways he has taught me so much, and with the years I'm often finding that Maharaj was already there, you know, just like they have these things on the walls sometimes, they Kilroy was here, you know. He was already there, you know. Yes, Maharaj was already there, and in so many places where we have not yet been. So anyway, in conclusion, let us try and come to this point of becoming deeply absorbed in serving all the devotees, and in keeping very open relationships of respect with all the Vaishnavas, and then always try to engage in glorifying the Supreme Lord. Then certainly we will very rapidly make spiritual advancement. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
You want to say something about controlling life here in the US?
No.
what is meant by controlling life here?
The life air, controlling the life air. The life air are driving. Are driving the sensual functions, so they are behind the sensual functions. So the source of energy of the sensual functions. So ultimately, it means the senses. And because of here, of course, the process of pranayama is referred to in the 11th canto. They are bringing up the life airs because they follow a process of pranayama, of through breath control, to get control over the senses and control the passions. That's why life air is brought in here in the case. But we take the extended meaning of controlling the life air to be controlling the senses. And therefore in the purport they refer to the Upadesamrita, Vachaveka Manasakavadavekam, controlling the senses and the mind. Anyone else? Yeah. Yeah. It is in fact a Vaishnava never takes offense, it is said. So you can see we have already taken offense when we feel that someone has offended us. Yeah? I feel no one can really offend me. That's the first platform of a Vaishnava. So, you know, someone shouts, "You fool! You fool!" Then it's actually, how can you speak like that? That's one reaction. Another reaction is like, yeah, I know, you're right. I am a fool, what to do? But I have one good fortune, that although I'm a fool, I receive the mercy of my spiritual master. So I still have something valuable. I am a fool, but I have something valuable. So one should, first of all, not take offense. But if we think that someone has gone a little bit far in behavior, what can we do to help that person? We can try and bring it up. It has happened to me sometimes that someone brought up something about a third person that I actually didn't want to hear. But I didn't cut out his tongue, I didn't commit suicide, and I also didn't immediately walk away from the spot, and I heard it, and then afterwards I thought, oh God, you know, what now? Now what? Maybe I've destroyed my devotional creeper. So what to do? Well, another option is go back to that person and say, well, you know, I've thought about what you said the other day about such and such person, and actually, you know, I feel it's a little bit too strong. I really feel that. Try and set it straight. Of course, if that person starts again, then you can not cut the tongue, don't commit suicide, but just walk away then. Say, well, I think now it's maybe time for me to walk away, Prabhu, Hare Krishna. Because sometimes it's a fact we're too quick on the draw, you know. We are not so deeply rooted in our invasion of behavior, and we are modern culture, you know, American culture, cowboy culture, you know. Shoot before asking questions. Bang, bang. Guns are still smoking. And there's the corpse, you know. I think, why did I do that? Please, come back to life, please. It's a little difficult. So keep those six shooters right in the holsters, you know, as much as possible. Atul.
We have like mediation methods and conflict resolution, all of this training in ISKCON, as you mentioned, we're a modern institute. And what about in our tradition, from our studies, Chaitanya Charitamrita, was this type of incidents in the traditional Vaishnava Sangha? How is it dealt with?
Well, in the traditional lifestyle, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they didn't have an ISKCON resolve or trained mediators and things like that. Even in a more traditional ISKCON, they didn't have mediators and things like that. Because even in a traditional ISKCON, you know, things would be taken to the guru and it would stop there, right? Or it would be taken to the GBC and it would stop there, you know. Later, people started to take, to involve the court and things like that. And that never happened in the earlier tradition of ISKCON. That was unheard of, that one devotee started a court case against devotees.
Outside
legal court of law. Here comes the judge. Here comes the bill. You know, that was not going on. In those days. In Vedic times, or in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find, therefore, that Vaishnava relationships are involving Vaishnava etiquette. There's always consideration of senior and junior. And ultimately, a junior doesn't directly disagree with his senior under normal circumstances. There is an injunction that we find in Krishna Bhajanamrita from Narahari Shaka, where it says that if one sees that a superior is deviating from the proper established standard by the acharyas and the scriptures, then in a respectful way one may bring it up to that superior and say that, but it seems that this is in contradiction with the proper standard, so how is this? That is allowed, but still respectful. You know? So the behavior in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in other of our scriptures of devotees was very much according to Vaishnava etiquette. And therefore, the real solution to these issues is Vaishnava etiquette. But Vaishnava etiquette goes two ways. It's not only from the juniors to the seniors, but the seniors also must be very... they must give... Well, let me explain. Sanatan Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he had met Lord Chaitanya in Benares, and he had been instructed by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was pleased with him. And then, some time later, Sanatan Goswami came for a second meeting to Jagannath Puri. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya introduced him to all the Vaishnavas, who were his regular associates. So Sanatan Goswami was new in the assembly, and knew as an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sanatana Goswami offered his obeisances to all these associates of Mahaprabhu, who he considered his seniors. And then they offered him honor and friendship, and I think respect was the third one. So they honored him. They were respected. The difference between honor and respect would be respect. They took whatever his contribution serious, right? It wasn't, and they offered him friendship. Yeah. So we see that although they were seniors, they treated him with great respect and affection and so on. And therefore, it's not only the juniors always have to bow down, and the seniors they can just. Take the club and hit everyone over the head as they like. No. It's a two-way street. But so, when the Vaishnava etiquette, Sadachar, was adhered to, then it worked. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very strict about that. When Jagadananda Pandit wanted to instruct Sanatan Goswami, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Jagga is just a boy. Who does he think he is? I even take advice from you. You know, who does he think he is to instruct you? He said, I will never be pleased with any Vaishnava who is not adhering to Sadachar. Right? So he said it so strong. And he also instructed Chaitanya Sanatana Goswami to write a book on Vaishnava behavior. So this Vaishnava etiquette and Vaishnava behavior is very, very important. That's the traditional solution for these kind of, for conflict resolution and so on, or even preventative, avoiding conflict. Hmm. Yes. Well, if someone takes offense, you know, why not pacify him? You know what I mean? If he is upset, pacify him. Don't ignore it. Don't just say, well, he's unreasonable, why is he getting so upset? No. You know, just say, well, sorry, Prabhu, I mean, I didn't mean to cause any stress or anything like that. It just sort of evolved like that, and later on the situation evolved, and then later on I also felt a little uncomfortable. I'm very sorry if it caused you some inconvenience. It's a small thing to say, just clear the relationships up. That's important. That if we get into that habit of in all directions clearing things up, then we'll see, then we'll be able to live very nicely in the community of Vaishnavas. And our hearts will be peaceful. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you have something a little awkward with someone happened, and then after that you cannot really look that person straight in the eyes anymore. You know, right? You see him walking past and go, cringe. You look down, try and look in another direction, and then we get a temple full of things like that. You know, this one sees that one coming in and puts a chadar over his head. In the end, it gets a little uncomfortable, all those chadars and all that. You know, everyone looking at different walls. It does get a little... It's not what you want. All right. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Kira.
Sarvasthamkana Maharaj Kira.